Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, celebrating the spirit of Taizé, the ecumenical prayer community in eastern France, and recalling its founder, Swiss pastor Brother Roger Schütz, who died in August 2005. Welcome to the programme. August 16th, 2005. World Youth Day celebrations had just opened in the German city of Cologne. Pope Benedict was preparing to attend the gathering, undertaking his first journey outside Italy since his election just 4 months earlier. Amid all the excitement and enthusiasm, the news of a tragic event suddenly brought a note of sadness to young and old alike. The 90-year-old Brother Roger Schütz, founder and leader of the Taizé ecumenical community in France, had been stabbed and killed by a mentally ill woman at the Church of the Reconciliation where he was leading evening prayers. Protestant pastor from Switzerland, Brother Roger began his ministry during the Second World War, offering shelter to Jews who were fleeing from Nazi persecution. As other brothers came to join him, he set up a Christian community, open to all denominations and based on a message of love and acceptance of all cultures and traditions. Today, the community is run by over 100 brothers of different nationalities and denominations. It's well known for its simple, meditative music, and it welcomes thousands of visitors and pilgrims each year. As news of Brother Roger's violent death travelled around the world, religious leaders of all denominations paid tribute to his outstanding life and legacy. Pope Benedict XVI sent a telegram of condolences to the shocked Taizé community, saying generations of Christians have found an authentic experience of faith within its walls. At his general audience in the Vatican the following day, the Pope said on the very morning of Brother Roger's death, he had received a moving letter from the aged friar, sending greetings to all young people gathered for World Youth Day in Cologne.
Durante i vespri ieri sera, il caro frère Roger Schütz, fondatore della comunità di Taizé, è stato coltellato, ucciso, probabilmente da una squilibrata, è morto.
During Vespers, yesterday afternoon, our beloved Frère Roger Schütz, founder of the Taizé community, was stabbed and killed, probably by a mentally disturbed woman. This news has affected me even more because precisely yesterday I received a very moving, affectionate letter from Frère Roger. In it, he wrote that from the depth of his heart, he wanted to tell me that we are in communion with you and with those who have gathered in Cologne. Then he wrote that because of his state of health, unfortunately, he would not be able to come personally to Cologne, but that he would be present spiritually with his brothers. At the end, he wrote in this letter that he hopes to come as soon as possible to Rome and meet with me and to tell me that our community of Taizé wants to go forward in communion with the Holy Father.
Di venire quanto prima a Roma per incontrarmi e per dirmi Combien notre communauté de Thésée voudrait cheminer en communion avec le Saint-Père, comme toute la communauté de Thésée a l'intention de camminare insieme col Papa.
Then he wrote by hand, Holy Father, I assure you of my sentiments of profound communion, Frère Roger of Thésée. At this moment of sadness, we can only commend to the Lord's goodness the soul of this faithful servant of his. We know that from sadness, as we just heard in the psalm, joy will be reborn. Frère Roger is in the hands of eternal goodness, of eternal love. He has attained eternal joy. He invites and exhorts us to be faithful laborers in the Lord's vineyard, even in sad situations, certain that the Lord accompanies us and gives us his joy.
Pope Benedict XVI paying tribute to Brother Roger Schütz. At the time of his death, Brother Roger was already preparing to hand over the running of the community to his longtime assistant, Brother Alois.
Young people today, we see it in Thésée throughout the year, that they want to read the gospel together.
Born in Bavaria in 1954, Brother Alois is a Catholic who joined the Thésée community at the age of 20 and has lived there ever since. As a volunteer and then as a brother, he made many visits to the countries of Central and Eastern Europe to support Christians there at a time when the region was under Soviet influence. More recently, he was charged with coordinating the international meetings that take place in Thésée and in other major cities across Europe. Particularly interested in music and the liturgy, he has also always devoted much of his time to listening to the voices of young people striving to make sense of their faith.
It's young adults who come, but now since so many years, and it remains for us a kind of mystery. Why does this continue for so many years? We do not know, but we want to welcome them and show them that God wants to welcome them. And all we can do is not so much to give solutions and tell them what they have to do and how they should change the world and how they should behave and what, but to accompany them and first to listen to them.
Thésée is all about reconciliation, isn't it?
Yeah.
It was founded in a spirit of reconciliation after the Second World War. Tell us a little bit more about this.
Because this is the heart of the gospel. I mean, Christ saved us and he made us one. And we cannot separate these two sides of our salvation, yes, that we are saved, but that we are one also. And Christians can show that. And Brother Roger always thought that if we start to show in concrete situations that we manage to live reconciliations, then we will keep also the flame of the gospel alive in humanity. That's why we have to work very concretely on reconciliation. And in our youth meetings, we always give to this a priority. For example, during the 90s, always people from Serbia and Croatia met in Thésée, even when there was the war and afterwards. And still now, it's not so easy for them to listen to each other, because there are wounds from the war still on both sides, and so there is a work of reconciliation that has to continue. Yeah? And this among different countries, among the continents, this is a dimension that always has been present, and we will emphasize this more now. Yeah? We Europeans, we have to listen to the other continents. I mean, also now we said we have to open ourselves to the others, but I would like to stress more concretely that we should listen to the people from the other continents. That's why we will have at the end of this year a European meeting, like each year since 28 years we are on this pilgrimage of trust, and we will have this in Zagreb, and we will have a youth meeting in India, in Calcutta, in October.
You mentioned Brother Roger and the huge legacy that he has left your community. What do you think, perhaps, if you had to describe exactly what it was that he brought to the community?
Oh, it's impossible to describe this exactly. It's a life that he left us. But his message became more and more simple at the end of his life. It was some words: trust, reconciliation, simplicity, yes? That we are not, even in our faith, we remain poor and we need the others. So it's a message of joy and fullness of God, and at the same time accepting our human conditions and not being afraid of going into the situations of suffering and knowing that God is with us. But he lived this, and he left this life to us. We feel this very much now. There is this shock. It was a real shock, of his death and the way he died, this violence. But also we feel that we are like carried by the presence of God.
How is he remembered in day-to-day life there in the community?
We still have to find ways, but he's very much present, of course. His tomb is very close to the small village church where the community started, because this is such a small village, and it was very poor. Brother Roger went there in 1940, yes, and then during the war and after the war, it was very poor. And his grave, it happened that this was the place just there now, very close to this small church, and this is like a sign for us that, yes, somehow in the communion of saints, he continues to pray with us.
Brother Alois, who took over as head of the Taizé community following the death of its founder, Brother Roger, in August 2005. And now, to understand more about the spirit of Taizé, Jill Bevilacqua takes us on a journey to this unique place of prayer and recalls her own pilgrimage there many years ago.
There is nowhere quite like it. Unique and unrepeatable, it fits into none of the usual categories. Not a shrine, but a truly holy place. A place of prayer, where people go to find God, and in the process often find themselves. But why Taizé? What's so special about it? Well, Pope John Paul II, who went there more than once, gave a simple explanation. You stop at Taizé the way you stop at a wayside spring. And Pope John the 23rd, who never had a chance to visit it, but who knew its founder and its purpose, once exclaimed, "Oh, Taizé, that little springtime." Two facets of the same reality. Youthfulness is one of the fundamental properties both of a spring and of springtime. So is that why thousands of young people are drawn to this place? It could be one reason, certainly. But the charisma of Taizé is another. It's a place where ecumenism is lived out daily, where a community of Christians of different denominations have committed themselves to a single aim, a gathering of men, as their founder wrote, hanging on a wild hope, the reconciliation of Christians and of all humanity. Your old men shall dream dreams, and your young men shall see visions. Taizé has been called a vision of reconciliation, and the young man who had this vision was Roger Schütz. It was 1940, and as war raged throughout Europe, he asked himself why such conflict should exist between people, especially between Christians. Son of a Swiss Protestant pastor, he himself was studying theology. But, as he wrote later,
the more a person wants to live in the absolute of God, the more essential it is for this absolute to be rooted in the midst of human suffering.
So he left the peace of neutral Switzerland and crossed the border into France. He found a house in an almost deserted village in southern Burgundy, only a few miles from the occupied zone. Here he lived and prayed, and here he sheltered Jews and other refugees. After the war, he was joined by those who were to become the first brothers of the community. On Easter Day, 1949, they made their solemn commitment to celibacy, to sharing of possessions, and accepting that one among them, as servant of communion, exercise a ministry of unity in the community. As its first prior, Brother Roger exercised this ministry until his death in 2005. Today, the Taizé community is composed of over 100 brothers from more than 25 different countries and of different Christian denominations. They live what is in its essentials the classic form of monastic life, with a rule and vows of poverty, chastity and obedience, plus an extra vow to community for life. They work for their living, each according to his skills, and may not accept gifts. As the rule says,
the boldness to use in the best possible way all present-day goods, and without fear of possible poverty, to lay up no capital, gives an incalculable strength.
Not all the brothers live at Taizé. Some live in fraternities among the poor of the world, sharing their life, offering their love. Brother Roger himself travelled the globe to be with the deprived and the disadvantaged. But let's go to Taizé and enter into its spirit. I came by train from the east, from Switzerland, travelling through the rich wine country with names that lingered on the palate. How surprised I was to discover that Puyi and Fuissé were two separate villages that had fused in a single delicate white nectar. On we went, in one of those high-speed trains where no one speaks above a whisper. Joined at Mâcon by friends whose son is an Anglican monk there, I came to Taizé on a warm June evening. As you approach, the first impression of the village is of a place outside time, untouched by the modern world and its harsh realities. As Geoffrey Moorhouse writes in his book Against All Reason, it looks as if it might be vegetating as thoughtlessly as the fields and slopes that surround it.
Seen from the hillside opposite, it's just another attractive French village, slipping off the end of a ridge in a scatter of warm brown walls and pink pantiled roofs, with a Romanesque church tower poking higher than anything else. All around is the rich, cultivated and undulating landscape of Burgundy, patched with woods, vineyards and cornfields, and with pasture. In a meadow below the church, cream-coloured cows idle in the grass. Over a wall, a peasant plods up and down his allotment, hand-sowing seed upon the crumbled red earth. It's a very peaceful place, and the only loud noise it hears is made by the occasional train passing the mayor's cottage at the bottom of the hill.
A bucolic picture, which soon evaporates as you come up the hill and are confronted with the reality, not of a sleepy village, but of a community throbbing with life. The Taizé experience usually lasts a week. Each day, small groups are formed, and brothers of the community give biblical instructions on the sources of faith. Each person contributes to the discussion that follows. The young people who come are seeking to discover how to unite prayer with their daily lives. I was only able to come for the weekend, but the Taizé weekend is rather special. It's a celebration of the Passion, Death and Resurrection of our Lord. On Friday evening, there's a prayer around the icon of the cross, which is laid flat on the floor of the church. On the Saturday evening, there's a candlelit Paschal vigil, and on Sunday morning, celebration of the Eucharist. But the pattern of the daily liturgical life of Taizé is centred on the three moments of prayer, morning, noon and evening. Everyone is drawn into the life of the place. The five moted bells out in the fields call you from wherever you are to the Church of Reconciliation. When you go in, you'll probably find lots of people there already. The church is open day and night. It's dimly lit, discreetly, from the floor, with a few icons illuminated by candles. No statues, but stained glass windows on the right-hand side. The mysteries of the rosary in brilliant colours. The work of the brothers themselves. And this makes this most unusual church a modern cathedral. There are no pews or benches, just very low stools on which people sit or under which they put their feet when kneeling. As we enter the church, they're singing one of those chants which, repeated over and over again, gradually takes hold of you until you yourself become part of it. Strangely, no one sings out of tune, and whatever language it is, it seems as familiar as your own.
The darkness is not darkness with you, O Lord. The deepest night is clear as the day.
There'll be a reading from Scripture, another chant, and long periods of silence.
We will go by night to find the source. Thirst is our only light.
And then there are those lines, infinitely consoling, which were found in the breviary of St. Teresa of Avila after her death. Nada te turbe.
Be thou of naught perturbed, of naught afraid, for all things pass save God, who does not change. Be patient, and at last thou shalt of all fulfillment find. Hold God, and naught shall fail thee, for he alone is all.
Once outside again, you look at the hillside spattered with hundreds of tents, and you might be forgiven for mistaking it for a holiday camp. It's nothing of the kind. The young people and families staying there do just that. They stay in Tézé. And it's also part of the agreement. Even nearby Cluny is out of bounds, nor is alcohol allowed. And with these sensible restrictions, no trouble arises. Nor does anyone feel the need to go elsewhere or to seek ephemeral comforts. Not in a tent, but lodged in the guest house, I was reminded of Charles de Foucault, for it's called El Abiod, after the village in the Sahara where he first stayed. On my last evening, we were guests at Frère Roger's table. Someone brought in a bunch of wild alpine flowers he'd picked when walking in the Alps a few days earlier. But they were in a sad state, frozen stiff. I just asked if they could be put in a cool place, he explained with a wry smile. I couldn't tell you what we had to eat at that memorable supper, for only one image remains, that of the face of Frère Roger, a face that glowed with holiness. But my pilgrimage didn't end at Tézé, for at the close of every year, there is a Tézé meeting in one of the big cities of Europe. That year, it was Rome. These meetings are part of the Pilgrimage of Trust on Earth, which the community set up as a support to young people. Tens of thousands of them take part, and hospitality is traditionally offered by local parishioners. My guests were two Italian and two Portuguese. A joyful conclusion to my experience of that little springtime. And Brother Roger, he is no longer with us. At the age of 90, tired and frail, he had named his successor and was about to relinquish his office as prior, when a tragic and totally unexpected destiny overtook him. It was the 16th of August, 2005, and the Tese community was gathered in the Church of Reconciliation for the evening prayer. Brother Roger, surrounded as usual by his monks and by hundreds of young people. Suddenly a woman pushed her way through the crowds, and before anyone could stop her, had stabbed the old prior as he knelt in prayer. Frère Roger is buried in the little churchyard of the village, with only a wooden cross to mark his grave, just like the brothers who went before him. When a coach drew up there one day, and people got out and began to strew flowers there, word got back to the community, and there was considerable concern, for this is not the Tese style. It is not a shrine, but a place of prayer. The prayer of Brother Roger was for reconciliation between Christians, and when this is fully achieved, Tese will no longer be needed. This is what Brother Roger believed, and this has always been a particular mark of Tese, its temporary quality.
The things that especially distinguish us at Tese may have to disappear one day when visible unity has been achieved.
So declared Brother Roger, a theme which he developed in his book, The Dynamic of the Provisional. There are no archives at Tese. But Tese cannot die, for in this place prayer has taken root. Tese will be a holy place forever. And even if, or rather when, Christians are once more in full communion with each other, there will still be need for the fulfilment of the second part of Brother Roger's wild hope. The reconciliation not only of Christians, but of all humanity. And Tese, after all, is not just a place, it's a way of life.
And my thanks there to Jill Bevilacqua for that very personal account of her pilgrimage to Tese. And that brings us to the end of the English programme for today, but we'll be back on the air at this same time tomorrow, so be sure to join us then if you can. Don't forget, you can always find all our news and feature programmes on the internet. Look us up at www.vaticanradio.org and click on the English icon. You're listening to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.